Many fathers think of themselves as the king of their castle, and perhaps rightly so. But I think a more fitting description of a father would be a castle keeper. Dad's number one job is to keep his castle from being attacked. And you know, the modern family today is under attack. I don't have to tell you that. You see it all around in the decisions that are being made and in the movies that are coming out and in the television shows that you watch. The traditional family, the one designed by God to have a mommy and a daddy, is almost unheard of. It is not viewed or respected as it ought to be. In fact, a U.S. Census Bureau report released just 2 years ago in America cited that one out of three children live without their biological dad. That's 24 million children in America. We have an absent father syndrome in this country, and it has an impact on nearly every societal issue that we face as a nation today. A child who grows up without a dad in the home is four times more likely to live in poverty, more likely to suffer emotional and behavioral problems, more likely to go to prison, more likely to commit crime, seven times more likely to become pregnant as a teenager, more likely to face abuse and neglect, more likely to abuse drugs and alcohol, and two times more likely to drop out of high school. Well, that's a great list. Obviously, a mom is important to a home, but dads are important too. I'm speaking today, though, not to absent fathers. You're here today. You have your family at church today because you want to be an involved parent with kids that turn out right, and that's a good thing. But I think there's still a subtle danger that even fathers in a setting like this can face, and that is to be present but not really actively involved in the lives of your kids. And I think it's a potential problem to even good-intentioned parents to be somewhat distracted or even distant because of the pressures of life and the pressures of work and the responsibilities that a parent has. So this sermon is a call to men to be keepers at home, to be keepers of their castle. So I direct your attention today to Psalm 101, and I want to show you what David had to say about his own home. It's very likely that David wrote this psalm very early in his reign as king. Very likely, if you have notes and want to read those instead of listening to me, you'll find out in your notes in your Bible that this was probably written at the time when the Ark of the Covenant had failed to be transported to Jerusalem the right way and instead had to be diverted for a brief time over to the house of Obed-Edom as David set things in order and learned how God wanted the Ark transported before it came into Jerusalem for the very first time. This is early in David's time in Jerusalem. He is a king. He's a king over a palace, a castle, and a kingdom. And how is he going to administrate his home? I think it's suggestive of how every dad ought to administrate their own home. So I have two points or two commitments I want to show you from our text today. But first, would you look with me at verse number 2. David says, "I will behave myself in a perfect way. Oh, when wilt thou come unto me? I will walk within my house with a perfect heart." Look with me again at verse 7. "He that worketh deceit shall not dwell within my house. He that telleth lies shall not tarry in my sight." I think it was interesting to me that early in the psalm and later in the psalm, David is indicating about what will be and what won't be in his house. Now, men, I want you to think about that as a keeper of a castle. What will you let in and what will you keep out of your home? So two commitments I'd like to give you today that ought to help all of us with this big question. And that is, how concerned are you about what goes on inside your castle? The first commitment is already on the screen. I believe David teaches us that we need to master the man. You need to master yourself. The safety of a home starts with the strength of the man who actually does the keeping. You don't want a weakling for a father. You don't want a weakling for a protector, so you need to master the man. In verse number 2 that I read just a moment ago, David says, he puts a high standard. He says, "I am going to behave wisely in a perfect way. I'm going to have a perfect heart. His behavior behind closed doors, inside the four walls of his house, he said was going to be perfect. Now, he isn't saying that any of us are perfect. I think many of us as dads realize the imperfections of decisions or matters that we've handled maybe in a less than perfect way. The word here, perfect, means, there it is, wholesome, sound, or complete. It has the idea of integrity without holes, without things missing that should be there. We would say that a person with integrity today lives above censure. He's beyond blame. And notice that David is concerned about that all the way down into his heart. I will walk within my house with a perfect heart. Did you know that no man is any bigger than what's in his heart? This is exactly what Jesus taught in the New Testament. In fact, when he's talking about the heart, he mentions in Mark chapter 7, verse 21 and following, that our actions come right out of our heart. Jesus said in Mark 7, verse 21, "For from within, out of the heart of men, proceed evil thoughts, adulteries, fornications, murders." Verse 23, "All these evil things come from within and defile the man." I think sometimes men get the idea that we can be one thing in public and another thing in private. But the Bible actually teaches the opposite, that whatever's going on in your heart will eventually seep out the corners of your life. It is going to happen. So what's inside is going to be on the outside eventually. And I think David realized this, and he's conscientious. When it comes to my house and what goes on in my kingdom, I am going to walk in a perfect way. I'm going to do so with a perfect heart. That doesn't mean you always get it right, but the intention is I'm going to live with integrity. I'm going to live above blame. I'm going to do right inside my house. So men, is the same true for you? What does go on in your home? What's it really like? Not the image that you present on Sunday morning when you're around pious church-going people, but what's it really like when no one else is looking on what's going on inside the home? Do you watch wholesome, only wholesome TV and movies? Or do you have a Mr. Hyde personality when you get scrolling on the internet pages that are available to you? And what about the way you treat your wife and your kids? Is it the same in the home as it is out of the home? Do you have a blameless heart, or are you harboring secrets? In 2002... I protested a wine shop being placed across the street from our church. There are actually laws in California. They may have been repealed by now. I haven't lived there for about 8 years. But at the time, you couldn't build a wine shop or a liquor store within a certain feet distance from the front door of a church or a school or a hospital. But the government, ever needing more tax revenue, has found ways to get around what the rules on the books had said. And that's what they were doing at the time I was there in 2002. This man wanted to put in a wine shop, and he had put in a lot of money renovating a storefront that was kind of broken down, and he just fixed it up and sure invested a lot of money to open up his business. But then the signs went up. I didn't know what he was putting in at the time, but when the signs went up that he was asking for an alcoholic beverage permit, I just wrote a letter to the government saying, "I protest." And that ends up being a big deal, because then the government, then he has to show up in a hearing before the state, and they have to look at it. And there are actually a couple reasons why they shouldn't have had the wine shop, not to run on a long rabbit trail here, but there's not only the distance, there's a certain number of concentration that they were allowed per block, according to statute in California. He was in violation of both of them. He was within 86 feet of the front door of our church, and there were already five other businesses within the block that sold alcohol. So he was actually raising the concentration. So there were two statutes that were in question. So I just mentioned those, and I actually ended up having to go to downtown Oakland, California, to this government building and actually held a hearing. This only happened about 6 months after we were married. And anyway, this wine shop owner, he was not happy with me. And it was obvious when I got the letter from his attorney in the mail. You ever get a letter from an attorney? A hostile attorney? I mean, it was a bully letter. Have you ever had a bully letter from an attorney? He said to me, listen, if you don't rescind your protest, I will work effortlessly to dig up whatever I can find in your life and expose it. Now, I guess that's legal to do that, to threaten somebody, all right? But that's what he did to me. I tell you, that was a disturbing letter to receive. And it bothered me. And I actually called another attorney and talked to them and got some legal counsel pro bono on that. And, you know, and then I folded the letter up and put it in a drawer. And you know what? It was a real relief to me to know when I pillowed my head that night, he could look all he wanted. He wasn't going to find anything that he could expose. And I really could just go on with my protest and not be concerned. he wasn't going to find a skeleton in the closet because there wasn't one there. You know, and I'm not bragging. I'm just saying that's the way every man ought to live. This is the way David was. I'm going to walk in my house in a perfect heart so that if anybody would ever come into my house, there wouldn't be anything that they could put their finger on and say, hey, David, look, there's a problem. Or Mike, hey, there's a problem here because a person is living in such a way that he has nothing to be ashamed about. Now, why aren't you to live this way? Why aren't you to live in such a way that nobody can call you to account? No one could point the finger at you. You know the reason why you ought to live this way? Because you are going to give an account of your life one day. You are going to show up in the presence of the Lord one day. And nobody knows when that's going to be. It could be today for you. And wouldn't it be nice to get in the presence of God and there's nothing that He could point the finger at? And He says in Romans chapter 4, I think we're ready for another slide here. Romans chapter 4, 14:12. So then every one of us shall give account of himself to God. I ought to live that way because I will be giving an account. Somebody is able to expose everything that's going on in my life, and I don't want to have a blame on my record. Anybody can live this way who chooses to. Well, you say, well, I got something in my past. There's something maybe right now in the present that needs to be taken care of. Folks, the great thing about God is there's this wonderful thing called forgiveness. If you'd step up to the pony up to the table today and say, God, this is what's wrong with my life. I'm out of line with you. I am not blameless. Would you forgive me? You can put it behind you and He'll never point the finger at you again. Now, this is the blessing it is to be under the grace of God and be on the other side of the cross where Jesus' blood paid it all for us. Friend, God calls you not just to be the king of your castle, He calls you to be the keeper of your castle. And for that to happen, you have to master the man who's in charge of that castle. And if you don't protect your heart, your castle will eventually crash down. Too many men give too little attention to their own heart. Oh, boy, they know what to tell Johnny. Now, Johnny, you better always tell the truth. But it's okay if Daddy needs to stretch it a little bit. Uh-oh. But Johnny, you better be home on time. When I tell you to be home, you better be home on time. But Daddy can show up whenever, even after dinner is served. And nobody better ask why he's running late that day. Johnny, you better do your chores as soon as you get home from school. But Daddy, he can let the house fall into disrepair and disregard his wife's to-do list weeks on end. Is that a double standard? You be the judge. So let's walk within our homes with a perfect heart. A keeper of the castle must keep his heart. This is exactly what Proverbs 4:23 says, keep thy heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. Another thing I think David brings our attention to is not just to keep a perfect heart, but is to keep a safe distance. He says this in verse number 3, I will set no wicked thing before mine eye. He goes on to say in that verse, I hate the work of them that turn aside, it shall not cleave to me. Verse 4, a froward heart shall depart from me, I will not know a wicked person. There are two words, wicked, here, one in verse 3 and one in verse 4, but the word in verse number 3, there it is, worthless, vile. It's actually the same word we just happened to touch on in David's life last week when he was dealing with Nabal and Abigail. Abigail called her husband a son of Belial or Belial. It means somebody who is godless or grossly wicked. And David is saying, I will not put anything godless or grossly wicked before mine eyes. I will keep a boundary. I'm going to keep a hedge in my home. This kind of stuff is not going to come in. You know why? He understood better than most men that no one is immune to temptation. No man in this room is immune. Given the right circumstances, the right provocation, any man in this room could fall. So how do you protect yourself? You keep a safe distance. You don't flirt with the edge. You don't walk along the edge of the rail at the top of the Grand Canyon. You don't get that close. You keep a safe distance. David is a perfect example of what I'm talking about. He could say one thing at the beginning of his reign, but he did an entirely different thing at the end of his reign. Some of you know what I'm talking about. I'm talking about 2 Samuel in chapter number 11. At a time when kings go forth to battle, David decided to stay home. And while he stayed home, he was walking on the top of his roof at night. We're ready for the next slide. He's walking on the top of his roof and he spies something from his roof. It's a woman bathing. And he steals a glance and then another. And then his imagination takes off. Ah, I bet I could. And that, And he lets the wheels spin. And within minutes, he brings to fruition what he in his imagination had dreamed up. And David, who knew much better and knew the importance of not setting anything wicked before his eyes, fell to that temptation, invited that woman in, later murdered her husband, and then had shame on his house the rest of his days. Keep a safe distance. Do what you need to do. He didn't stay away from what was in front of his eyes and it got him into trouble. Boy, man, we need this. We need constant reminders about keeping the heart pure. And we need constant reminders about keeping the eye gate safe. Our minds are better than film. Images captured by the eyes remain on the film of our minds for always. Now, I think there is some truth to the fact that vividness of those images fades over time. You ever pulled out those old photographs from those photographic books from when you were kids and how they yellow with time? Some of you know what I'm still doing. The digital age is not going to appreciate this, right? Those old 35mm photos that are yellowing. And so over time, the image yellows a bit, but it never permanently leaves. So keep your distance. Men, we need to help our boys with these things too. But I think David's concerned not just with his eyes, because he goes on in verse number 3 and he says, I hate the work of them that turn aside. Verse number 4, a froward heart shall depart from me. I will not know a wicked person. It's not just about wicked things, it's about wicked people he's going to keep out of his house. You know, you know some men that are just toxic. They're like toxic waste. You can't be around them or in earshot of them before you just feel gross and you feel like you need a shower. You know what I'm talking about. You need to keep a safe distance. Keep away from people that have a corrosive influence on your life. I want to ask you, Dad, do you have items in your home that you'd be embarrassed about if your kids discovered? How about if I happened to drop by and it just happened to slip out from under the cushion of the couch? Do you let the filth of the modern world seep into your home through the television or the internet? What do you do to keep a safe distance from evil? David's concerned about it. He wants to be a good king. He wants to be a man of integrity. So he's going to master the man. He's going to have the right kind of heart. And he's going to keep his distance from evil in his home. I think that's only part. It's an important part, oft neglected part, because we think we can be one thing and do another, but honestly, the Bible teaches we cannot have that kind of duplicity. It doesn't work. What's ever in our heart's going to seep out. But But there's a second part to this message, a second important trait that you need to have, a commitment that you need to have if you're going to be a dad who keeps the castle. And that second point is this: you must monitor the gate. Monitor the gate. I think of those old castles, right, with those great drawbridges, and even behind the great drawbridges, a big iron gate that comes down and keeps out what needs to be kept out. And David is concerned about that. We have a hint of this in verses 3 and 4. He says, I won't let a wicked person within. He says, I want to keep this kind of thing out. So when we're monitoring the gate, we really see two ideas here. And the first one, a monitoring gate, is just to keep the evil out. That seems pretty clear and pretty simple. We must keep things out of our castle that would do harm to those inside the castle. Look at verse number 5. He first mentions slanderers. Whoso privily or privately slanders his neighbor, him I will cut off. A slanderer is a person who speaks what is untrue with the intention of pulling down the person, and in a kingdom, often leading to his execution. So it's somebody who's using his tongue to work the demise of another person. That person isn't welcome in my home, David says. Then he says in verse number 5, him that hath a high look, this is an attitude of haughtiness and a proud heart, will I not suffer. A proud person has an air of superiority. He has a look that says, I'm more important than you, and David wasn't going to tolerate that. Then look at verse number 7. He says, he that worketh deceit shall not dwell within my house. He that telleth lies shall not tarry in my sight. I believe the deceit here refers to dishonesty, but it probably is a summation in verse 7 of the two ideas that he had back in verse 5. A deceitful person is the one who deceives people with his words or his attitude. So it could involve both of the problems that we saw back in verse number 5. At any rate, David identified certain things that had to be kept out of his home. Now, I don't know that our radar is up to slander and pride and deceit. It should be. But I think there are probably more pressing evils to a dad today than the ones that are outlined in the text. There are dangers that dads face today that we need to keep out. And I think we need to have the courage as men to do what David said, and this kind of person, this kind of stuff is not going to be in my home. This video, this music, this comic book, this whatever, doesn't, as long as you're in my home, it's not welcome here. Many teenagers, I'm afraid, are given far too much license in the home. And I'll say, as a teenager, I was given far too much license. I wish somebody else had put the boundaries and put up the chains a bit and kept me from things. As a godly father, you have the opportunity to do that for your kids. Your kids don't have to repeat your mistakes. That's why you're there. That's why you're the parent. And still, many homes, the teenager calls the shots, and sometimes even younger kids than that tell dad and mom how it's going to be. David stood up and said, no more. And I'm urging you to do the same. I think some of us are clueless, really, about what's going on with our kids. Do you have access to your kid's Facebook account? When's the last time you checked it? Do you know who their friends are and what their friends are posting on Facebook? If you don't see something that rings true as being good, it probably isn't. And your child's Facebook privileges need to be adjusted, maybe even eradicated. We really don't know what's seeping into many of our kids' lives because we're just not as involved as castle keepers as the men we ought to be. The castle is being invaded. There is somebody working for the destruction of your home. Dad, are you aware of it? You can brag all you want about being king, but it's so much more important to be a keeper. Put parameters on TV and movie watching. Install filters on your routers or your PCs. Check your kids' cell phones. Take responsibility. After all, you are the keeper of the castle. So, Up until this point, you're probably thinking, man, this is a really downer message, isn't it? So negative. Man, what is it about these Baptist churches and negative sermons? I'm telling you. Don't you guys have anything positive to say? Well, I do. There's a positive verse in our text. Did you notice it? It's verse number 7. That's where I'd like to finish. Because David wasn't all about just get the evil out. That's important. He was interested about getting the right people in. See this? Verse number 6. Gave you the wrong verse. Verse 6. Mine eye shall be upon the faithful of the land, that they may dwell with me. He that walketh in a perfect way, he shall serve me. It isn't just about keeping the evil out. It's about bringing the good stuff in. He said, I want the faithful. Those are the people I got in my eye. Those are the people I'm going to promote. Those are the people who are going to go somewhere in my kingdom. And then notice what he said. He that walketh in a perfect way, he shall serve me. The word perfect here is the same word back up in verse number 2. He not only claimed, I'm going to have a perfect heart. He said, that's the kind of people I'm going to hire. That's the kind of people I'm going to get in my house. He that walks in a perfect way, he shall serve me. That you not only need to be the right kind of person, but you need to surround yourself with the right kind of people. Interestingly, David is very concerned about administrating, not just from the top down himself, but surrounding himself with the people that are going to reinforce the same message. He's going to bring people of integrity into his home. You know, Dad, you as a godly Christian dad, you have that opportunity to bring godly Christian influence. You can suggest the right kind of music. You can monitor, bring in good Christian literature or movies for your kids to watch. You have the opportunity to bring in the good and help them to see it so that they'll prefer the good and not the evil. And that's our opportunity as a dad, to pick the good and put it in front of our kids. This is a benefit of a church like this. You know, sometimes you might feel very alone as a dad because you're the only one. This is the way it's going to be. This is what, you know. But you bring your kids to church, you're influencing them and you're putting them around other people of integrity who are teaching the same message and reinforcing exactly what you're trying to get out of your kids. Take advantage of that. That's what David's doing. I got my eye on the faithful of land. He's going to dwell with me. That's the kind of people I want around me. And not just about church. What do you do when we have guest preachers or missionaries in? Some of you have them in your home for meals. You know, there should be a line at the door anytime I have a visiting missionary come into this church or a visiting pastor. Next couple weeks, we're going to have some guest preachers here at our church. There ought to be a line at the door. I want that guy in my home to talk to my kids because I want my kids to turn out like them, not the influences they're getting at the school or from their friends today. Amen. You're missing a great opportunity if you don't invite. Well, you know, I don't like to cook and my wife's not much of a cook. That is a pathetic excuse in our world when it is so easy to go down and pick up a Papa Murphy's for about $7 or $8 and bring it home and feed a guest. Feed your family and enjoy the input. Dwell with the faithful of the land. Get surround your home with people who are walking in a perfect way so they get a vision and an opportunity. Oh, are you getting it? This is a great opportunity. Just a couple weeks ago, we had the Kim family in our home when they were visiting here. Great couple. Great ministry. I should have to fight to get a missionary in my home. Because as a dad, you're desperate to get the right kind of people in front of your kids. They get the wrong kind of people on the TV and in the movies. And they get the wrong kind of influences at the schools. And the way you salvage that or the way you overcome that is you put around them the kind of people you want them to be around. So they'll turn out that way. So bring the good in. It's not just about keeping evil out. It's about doing what David did here to bring the good in. So what are you doing to bring the good in? Have you given any thought to having a pastor or missionary in your home? Have you given any thought about ways to get good music or books within the reach of your kids? Let's not simply criticize the wrong. Let's offer them the right and the good. So, Dad, are you a keeper or just a king? Good kings are good at keeping the castle. I want to finish today by inviting you or encouraging you to think again about what's going on inside your home and about something that you may be missing, that's flying under your radar even today. Just a week or so ago, a couple weeks ago, my family watched a documentary by Nova on escape from Nazi Alcatraz. There's this castle in Colditz, Germany, that was used as a POW camp for Allied officers during World War II. So it wasn't just the normal soldiers there. These were officers. They were always dreaming up, according to the documentary, ways of busting out of Colditz. The Dutch were the best at it, according to the documentary, because they would go down and play rugby in the field. And there was this little door they found, and they snuck under, and they hid. They all pile up in a rugby pile on top of this door. Two guys would jump into the little door, flip it closed. The Germans never knew it. They wait till dark, get out of the door, and they'd run back to the Netherlands safe. Anyway, the most audacious plan was conjured up by some British officers. And in fact, one guy actually went to the library in Colditz and checked out a book on aerodynamics so he could learn a little bit, actually airplane aerodynamics. And so he's reading a book on how to build a plane. They actually did build a plane in the roof of this castle. I don't know if you can see the black and white photo, but this is actual photo taken after the war of the plane. So they used floorboards and bed sheets. And slowly, over a matter of weeks, they constructed a false wall in the attic. And behind the false wall, several of them would go in and work on this plane right under the nose of the Germans. Now, isn't this cool? So they build this plane, and their thought is when it comes time to do it, they're going to peel back the roof shingles, and they're going to launch this thing off the roof of the castle, maybe using some kind of a counterweight and pulley system to yank the plane off fast enough so it can get airborne. You know what? The Germans never found it. And the British never got to use it because the war ended before they could get to fly the plane. Actually, not a plane, a glider. It raises this interesting question, though. What's going on in your attic? Maybe that's not a good illustration for Tucson. Whatever's in your attic today is going to die. But what is flying under the radar in your home? Dads, it's time to man up. Dads, it's time to be more than a king of your castle. It's time to be a keeper of it. And David points the way. Let's get on board and follow. Shall we pray?